Sight to the Blunt. I hope everyone is having a fruitful morning. Are any of you participating in Super Bowl festivities? It's nothing to be ashamed of. I know some of you are still coming out of this world and you're trying to find solace in the things that you think you still care about. So you need to see and feel if the path of Yahuwah is different from the path of the world. And you're going to find that you're going to be very uncomfortable in those surroundings. Once you are being exposed to the way Yahuwah works, the way he is, his will, his statutes, you will be disgusted and bored very, very quickly with the rest of the world. It'll happen. Surely, slowly but surely, it will happen. So if you are going to participate in Super Bowl activities, like going to a friend's house, going to your family's house, and just sitting and talking, just observe. Observe how everyone is. Observe the game, if you're going to watch it. Observe the energy. Start understanding the way being in this world will delude your attention to Yahuwah, and then come away from it and see the difference. After the game, after the energy is gone out of the room or out of the household, just take notice of Yahuwah, and you'll understand why we have selected this path and why this path was selected for us. You know it's going to be a ritual. The whole thing I feel about the whole Super Bowl halftime show is they told you it was going to be a dress wearing Puerto Rican on stage, doing all types of foolishness. But really, they're going to make it so good that they're going to make people who didn't want to watch the Super Bowl halftime show look stupid. That's why they did it. That's why they released. Bad Bunny's going to wear a dress. They wanted everybody in the upheaval to be upset. And then when you find out, when you didn't watch it, they'll be like, man, it wasn't that bad. It was really good. You look it's supposed to make those who jump to conclusions, who jump to judge, look stupid. That's why they're doing it. Now, mind you, it's still going to be a ritual. It's still going to be symbolism. It's still going to be all the trims and trimmings of Satanism, but it won't be in a way that people can readily identify it. They know people are being awakened. I think this is like the second or third wave of the awakening. And I'm kind of basing this on the whole Epstein file thing. That they keep releasing Epstein files. And what comes with that? It's not anything actually being done. You're getting emails. And some of those emails, we aren't validating. How do we know that these are the emails? How do we know? Anybody can forge these emails to make it look like an email. Just like you could forge text to make it look like text. Why do we get emails instead of text messages? If the communications is going through the phone, and they're not all using computers. At the time, BlackBerry was fairly popular. So you're trying to tell me these people got phones in their hands. They can text and do all this, but they run to emails. And emails has been the one device that keeps being exposed. You know, Hillary Clinton got exposed for 33,000 emails. You wouldn't think they would show more text messages than emails, but they have the emails. So it's like almost like a breach of national security to be having people's emails, but we have them. But who's verifying them? Who's validating them? Now, I believe some of them are fake and some of them are just used just to drown out the real truth. It's nothing we could do about it. There was a guy on TikTok. He was talking about, he wished that he could stop being aware, that he wished he could cut his awareness by like 25%. He said, what am I supposed to do with all this awareness? Like, what am I supposed to do? We can't change anything. And you're right, you can't change anything. But what you can change is your actions and how you move throughout this world. If you are doing the same exact nonsense that Satanists do, Luciferians do, then you would be at risk for judgment. There's no separating the profane from the holy. It doesn't have to be just by activities. It could be the way you think, the way you talk, the way you act, the way you teach, the way you preach, the way you sing. It could be through all those things. We have to be set apart. You cannot use the world to glorify Yah. It says in Scripture that we must serve Him because He's looking for those who are willing to serve Him through Ruach and truth. And when I look at that Jeffrey Epstein video that he supposedly did with either Steve Bannon or whatever interviewer, which is crazy to me that they would want this man interviewing being interviewed when he's running a human trafficking ring. Why would you want this? It's not very mafia stylish. So it makes it seem to me that they have perfected AI so well that they actually got somebody to cosplay Jeffrey Epstein. And what you're seeing is actually not Jeffrey Epstein, but an AI image. I mean, did we not see countless times all over the internet, people having these AI engines and then showing you how they can morph into different celebrities and celebrities look like that's the people. There was a woman that got swindled out of thousands of dollars because the AI that was used to fool her was George Clooney. And when I saw the video of it, it looked just like George Clooney. I mean, it was no glitches or anything. So if this is already in the hands of random people, just imagine where it came from, the source of it comes from. So when I looked at that, I was like, I don't know. I don't think it's Jeffrey Epstein. I think they're doing all of this propaganda and spinning this whole thing about Goyim. Now being a Goyim is like almost like being called the N-word. Now they just spinning that. It just so happens that a politician out here in Florida mentioned Goy slop, which is cafeteria food in public schools. He called it Goy slop. And then Jeffrey Epstein and all the people that he talked to all of a sudden used this key word calling non-Jews Goyim, which really they're proselytes and they're Goyim themselves. But when they say Goyim, they're really referring to white folk, which they are also too. They're not a race, they're a religion. But they have this disdain against white folk for some reason. So this is why they pit us against each other. If you've seen that, if you've seen the commercial that Robert Kraft funded, it was about the Blue Alliance, which is standing up against anti-Semitism. In the commercial, you don't even know it's a Jewish kid, but you know he's a small, frail, he looks weak, he looks like he gets beat up, he looks like he gets picked on and bullied. And somebody put a post-it on his book bag saying, "Dirty Jew." If you look at the reality of the situation, most Jews go to Hebrew schools, and this is the reason why they do it. I don't know why a Jew would send his child to a public school knowing he has the capabilities and the nepotism to send him to a Hebrew school only. But I don't know. I'll settle with their folly. So then this 5'9", 5'10", Negro boy shows up and puts a blue post-it on top of the Dirty Jew post-it. And then he says, "Hey, don't worry about that." And then we're going to go down the same hallway as supposedly these bullies were waiting for him. And he goes, "Hold up." He said, "They're not worth it." As if this Jew was going to go down and fight or argue. He just said, "They're not worth it." He puts a little post-it, a Blue Alliance post-it sticker on his chest. And then they walk and become friends. He has his hand around him. And that's what they want. They want us to defend them. And in order to defend them, we would have to be fooled again that their trauma is like our trauma. That what happened to them in World War II is similar to what we've been through in the transatlantic slave trade. Like, this is how pathetic these people are. You could use any other race to defend you, but there's a reason why they need us close to them. And the reason why they stuck close to us is to keep us away from who we are. That's why they want to manage us so hard. Because we are the secret to their lie. They need to watch over us. This is why the whole civil rights movement was pointless to me. because they were watching Martin Luther King. They needed Martin Luther King to keep his people in Christianity. This is why when they sent an assassin to go shoot up this Christian church that he used to be a pastor of, and they clipped his mother, and then the kid that did it, he came out saying, well, I'm a Hebrew Israelite. I'm a black Hebrew Israelite. I've been taught by this guy. And I feel that all pastors, Christian pastors, were of the devil, and they led black folk astray, which he was right. But it was that at that time, them trying to bring to naught the awakening, because they didn't know when that awakening was coming. They didn't know when we were going to be awakened, but they knew if they stomp it out early, it won't grow as big. And when they can go back into history, be like, okay, these guys been here before, and look what they did to Martin Luther King. And if you were a Christian, you'd be like, oh, I'm hating the black Hebrew Israelites because this is what they were doing. They teach hate and they practice hate. So every little psyop after that got you to not believe in the truth. And then they rose up these camps, and these camps didn't come out of nowhere. These camps been here. But when it's time, when they sat and watched the awakening happening, like, all right, now we need these camps out here to dilute the truth and get people away from the truth. So this is why they've always been around our necks, like a millstone around our necks, just to manage and be a gatekeep, a gateway for us to not go back into the truth. So the whole thing also about, you know, the Epstein files is that why would people want to know? Truly, why do you want to know of how dirty these people are? Like, it's to a point now that people want to know the videos. They want to see the images. They want to know like how they got down. That's, I don't know why. I really don't. It's almost the same thing with the Sean Combs situation. People want to know so desperately what sexual deviance did to minors and to other people, other, you know, same age bracket. I don't know why you want to know that. Why do you want to know what 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-old men do? But people need this truth to see what? To find out who is being protected. They're never going to tell you. Never. You'll never know who's actually a part of this whole situation until they die off. And you might not even hear it then. The reason why they give you this information is because they want you to tear down your faith in the institution. When they're ready to crash everything and to bring in the new world order, they need you to hate the old world order. And by doing so, you have to have a disdain for the government. You got to assume that, oh, the government's hiding pedophiles. The government's never going to prosecute pedophiles. He got away with it, and they continue to keep getting away with it. So I'm going to lose hope in this government, lose hope in this world order. And that's what they want. They want you to lose hope so they can give you a new one. And so, okay, we're going to operate from the status of truth and honesty. And it won't be none of these, you know, human trafficking and sex trafficking, which is a lie. All they're going to do is make it more mainstream. By the time you get ready to stand against it, you'd be so beat down over them not doing anything that you just accept whatever they want to do anyway, especially when you're more concerned with your own survival. And then they mingle Jay-Z in there for a little bit and like try to make it seem like Jay-Z, Steve Bannon, Harvey Weinstein, and Jeffrey Epstein was like such a close-knit thing, but that seems kind of far-fetched. I think Jay-Z has his own issues, but I think by releasing it with Jeffrey Epstein, it all gets cluttered. It all has, like, it makes it seem that it has no evidence. Like, again, they're basing this off of emails. And you have to know that these people are so secretive, why would they use emails to be exposed? When you think that if they talk through symbolism, if they talk through numeric code, why wouldn't they continue the same symbolism and numeric codes? Why would they just talk so freely to each other and mentioning each other? I mean, you can keep going through all those files and logs, but it's not even the same information that you would know that we haven't known before. So to say that Jay-Z was at Jeffrey Epstein's mansion and all. Like, I don't know. That's kind of a little bit far-fetched. I think his issues are separate. Now, I think his issues is still being around Harvey Weinstein and them doing their own little thing. But to do it in Jeffrey Epstein's mansion when they got mansions all over this country and places all everywhere they can go, why would they just need to go to Jeffrey Epstein's mansion? So I don't know. I'm not pardoning him because if you look at the Kanye West workout plan music video, there's a part in the music video where these kids are going through a maze, like a jungle gym maze, and then they see Bill, not Bill, but they see Sean Combs, Jay-Z, Dame Dash, and Bill Gates. That's who they see, and as like a cardboard cutout, and these kids go running. So it was like that was kind of like alluding to what they've been doing. And of course, if you hear Pharrell and Jay-Z's song "Young Girl," that gives him away. I mean, he had that song "Girls, Girls, Girls." I mean, it wasn't called "Women, Women, Women." It was called "Girls, Girls, Girls." Then he mentions in that music video, "There's a girl, you know, I gotta toss a couple of dollars just to shut up or holler," as if she's young acting or she may be young. And then people are exposing how he met Beyonce to how he met Aaliyah and how he shared that girl with R. Kelly, because him and R. Kelly had that album together called The Best of Both Worlds. So it's nothing's going to happen, is what I'm saying. Nothing. They're not going to be in front of a congressional hearing explaining their relationship with Jeffrey Epstein. I think it's all smoke and mirrors. They keep bringing him out so much now, he's become a AI meme. Like people are now using Jeffrey Epstein's likeness and his image, and putting it with the Iron Man AI or Iron Man movie scenes. I'm pretty sure you've seen them. If you haven't, just look them up. Look them up. We have the ability to turn people from heroes into villains and turn villains into heroes. That's what they're doing. They're bringing that energy with it. Like, oh, we can't do nothing about Jeffrey Epstein, so we just settle with him being the hero of a guy who just was doing his thing. That he wasn't actually a pedophile. He just liked women who were very young, barely legal is what they call him. And since so many young men to older men still watch porn and go to that barely legal category, that's where their mind goes. Their conscience is so seared with pornography and it's so normalized that you're like, hey, I mean, they weren't children, but they were of age. They could have said no. That's how you kind of rationalize yourself with sinful behavior. But it's all a distraction for what's really coming, which is all out war, which is the fall of the financial grid, the power grid, and they've just been already predictive programming it. They're doing it through the Winter Olympics. Now people already made an uproar about it. Oh, it's demonic and satanic. It's supposed to be. I don't know why people are so shocked when every ceremony now has some touch of Satanism in it. I mean, they had look it looked like the arches that the ceremony was at was fire around it. It was all red, and then they have like a burning pentagram in the middle. It's like a soft pentagram or a pentagram within a circle. So it was almost like a energy harvesting thing. But if you saw in the Winter Olympics the outfit of Haiti, I mean, the outfits is top tier, especially for the women. They had like a nice, beautiful, they looked like a beautiful Israelite head wrap and like a long, long dress or skirt. It looks very West African, to tell you the truth. Very West African. And this fashion designer, I think her name is Billie Jean. Or Emily Jean, something like that, where she's half Italian and half Haitian. I don't even know how you find a half Italian, half Haitian fashion designer. So this is all done for a purpose. But there was the artwork where there was a horse, and upon that horse sat Toussaint. I don't want to mess up his. I'm gonna mess up his last name. Louverture, Toussaint Louverture. He was famous for leading the Haitian Revolution, a successful slave revolt that ended slavery and brought independence to Haiti, making him a pivotal figure in Black history, a national hero, and one of the fathers of Haiti. He transformed a slave rebellion into a formidable revolutionary movement through brilliant military and political skill, becoming governor general for life before his capture and death, setting the stage for Haiti's ultimate independence. Now, they took this figure off that horse. So it's just a red horse on the outfit of the Haitian Winter Olympic outfit. Now, this was the excuse that they used. The International Olympic Committee, IOC, forced Haiti to remove the image of revolutionary leader Toussaint Louverture from its 2026 Winter Olympic uniform, citing rules against political, religious, or racial propaganda. Designer Stella Jean, that's her name, Stella Jean replaced the portrait with a red horse without a rider. Now, we just go to Revelation 6, 3, and 4, where the red horse is the second of the four horsemen of the apocalypse, representing war, bloodshed, and removal of peace from the earth. Released upon the second seal, its rider is granted a great sword and the power to cause, as noted by the verses, worldwide conflict and immense slaughter. So that's the programming. And they use someone who's of Italian and Haitian descent to forward that. Now, we know Italy, Rome is Idumea, Edom, Esau, which in scripture, he was red. So this is all their symbolism. As pathetic as they are as a people, this is their symbolism. They're so threatened by real revolutionaries. They're so threatened by our freedom. This is why they trodden down in Haiti, and that's why it's so afflicted with voodoo, hoodoo, and religion. And this is why their resources get cut off. This is why they go in there and try to steal the children from out there. It's because there's such their hatred for losing. Like, just imagine the hatred when the Zulus beat the British and beat them back into another camp, another fort, until eventually the Zulus lost. But the very first butt whooping they took was when they tried to come down to South Africa into Zululand and take what wasn't, that did not belong to them, and the Zulus beat them without guns, without ammo, without lead. They beat back the British. So from since then, it was always this hatred with these people, these Europeans, these children of Yafet, against the children of Yasharel. Now, obviously, they'll get their day in judgment. But this is what you pay attention to. This is what you look out for as to be a watcher. Not someone just saying and talking and doing for no reason and without helping others. Not being puffed up by your own knowledge, but helping people. Now, I want to turn my attention to a story that I brought up before, and I think I brought this story up literally the last time. My last podcast, I brought this story up. There were wise sentences that three men said if they spoke the wisest sentence, King Darius of Persia would grant them whatever they wanted. So in Third book of Ezra, chapter 3, I'll start at verse 4. Then three young men that were of the guard that kept the king's body spoke one to another. Let every one of us speak a sentence. He that shall overcome and whose sentence shall seem wiser than the others, unto him shall the king Darius give great gifts and great things in token of victory, as to be clothed in purple, to drink in gold, and to sleep upon gold, and a chariot with bridles of gold, and a head attire of fine linen, and a chain about his neck. And he shall sit next to Darius because of his wisdom, and shall be called Darius his cousin. And then everyone wrote this sentence, sealed it, and put it under the pillow of King Darius. The first wrote, wine is the strongest. The second wrote, the king is strongest. The third wrote, women are strongest, but above all things, truth bears away the victory. Now, the one that said, wine is the strongest, he said unto them, declare unto us your mind concerning the writings. Then began the first who had spoken of the strength of wine. He said thus, O ye men, how exceeding strong is wine. It causes all men to err that drink it. and makes the mind of the king of the fatherless child to be all one, of the bondman and of the freeman, of the poor man and of the rich. It turns also every thought into jollity and mirth, so that a man remembers neither sorrow nor debt. And it makes every heart rich, so that a man remembers neither king nor governor, and it makes to speak all things by talents. Which is funny. I'm pretty sure everyone's seen this video of the guy, the African guy during this podcast. He goes, one drunk man is smarter than, I think, at least like 100 women with PhDs or whatever. And he got cut off at the interview. But to go into this more, back to 18, it says, and he says, O ye men, how exceeding strong is wine. It causes all men to err that drink it. So it didn't matter if you were a king, if you were fatherless, a bondman, or a free man, or a poor man, it makes you err if you drink too much of it. And I fear around this time, a lot of you are, wherever you are in the respective states or countries, that during this winter time, you guys are attaching yourselves with the spirit or the ruach of drinking too much. You haven't conquered that vice. Especially in the wintertime when you're not moving as much. And if you're a single man, you're not going out as much. You're not wasting time on money. I mean, wasting time on hanging out or whatever. So you're finding one vice to deal with. And usually you find yourself drinking more because of the holiday season, championship season, and just being around friends who are participating in these activities. It turns also every thought into jollity and mirth, so that a man remembers neither sorrow nor debt. That means you're not even thinking about your trials, your troubles, your tribulations, which is what alcohol is supposed to do. Alcohol is supposed to make you forget. It is it's actually a depressant. So as soon as you forget, it brings it all back. If anyone who is a champion at drinking alcohol, you know what that feels like. When you drink too much, you forget the night. You forget what you did that night. But it all comes rushing back. Eventually, guilt, the sin of guilt, all comes rushing back. And when they are in their cups, they forget their love, both to friends and brethren, and a little after draw out swords. But when they are from the wine, they remember not what they have done. O ye men, is not wine the strongest that enforces to do thus? And when he had so spoken, he held his peace. Alcohol has the ability to rob you of your attention and your deeds to Yah. It has the ability to rob you of emotional stability and governing your house and governing your relationships. Some of you only act out against either women or whoever that's around you only because you've had too much alcohol. Does this make you a bad person? No. No. But you will understand within yourself the reason why you act the way you act because of alcohol is because the power that you feel it gives you. When you are under your own power, all alcohol and drugs do is just push you to where your mind was already at. Now, you might be a quiet guy who goes about his daily life, but you pay attention to your world, the world that you create. You know what you don't want in your world. You have the ability to say, I don't want this, I don't want that. I want people to act like this. I want my lover to be this way. But more and more when you drink, when alcohol becomes the forefront of how you deal with not being able to control everything, then that person comes out of you where now you're not being as patient or as graceful with people when they transgress against your little world. Now you become the hammer. And that has the ability or the possibility to go into something else, whether you hit your lover or you hit a friend, you hit a family member, or you just violent somewhere where everyone's drinking, or and someone steps on your toe or someone bumps into you. And these ruachs, these unclean ruachs that follow your bloodline, have the ability to know when it's your time to get into some foolishness. And then you'll go through a period of being embarrassed. Now, if you have Yah in your life, he will put you in situations where you're going to hear him. If he has selected you for a specific purpose, he is going to put you in situations where you're going to hear him. Now, mind you, I'm telling you to go from A to D without having to go through the trials and tribulations of B and C. I would rather have you learn within your household how to be moderate with your vices. I'm not going to ever be the one to tell you, hey, man, you should completely stop drinking. Because when I had a problem with alcohol, I knew I was never going to stop drinking. But through the Ruach HaKodesh, I don't allow myself to have maybe more than two. And if I find myself at the three or four, I purposely drink waters in between one and two, and then three and four. And I even step back for a little while. Because before, I used to social drink. I was a social drinker. And that was to help me buffet the social anxiety I would feel by being in places with a lot of people and have to conversate with them, because I was not a talker. And usually you need that liquid courage to get you through those times. So I would understand when I was coming out of this world that I felt that when I was nervous, I would take sips back to back. If I didn't know what to do, you only could look at your phone, but so many times I would just drink, I would sip too fast. And that's how after a while I would just be unhinged. So the party had to keep going. But I knew at when 3 a.m. hit, 4 a.m. hit, that alcohol depression sets in. So whatever trauma I did not resolve, whether it be childhood, whether it be job opportunities I didn't get, or failures in my life, whatever situation that would just pop up, like the ESPN top 10 of things I failed at, that would come back at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., or whoever's around me would get whatever behavior alcohol caused. So I just learned to be moderate. I know what liquors to stay away from. I know when too much is too much. I don't even allow myself get to that point. I'm so scared or have such a fear for the Most High Yahuwah, I don't even want people to see me drunk. At my wedding, I wasn't even drunk at my wedding. I thought I was going to get tore up at my wedding. Nope. I drove home that night. Surprisingly, because I did shots. But I also paced myself and also was dancing and sweating it out. But I was fine after my wedding. I thought I was going to get tore down. I thought they were going to have to carry me out of there. And that was my fear. I was like, damn. I was like, I'm going to be excited. And I'm going to have a flashback of days drinking. I'm just going to go ham. Nope, didn't even happen. But that's what the Ruach HaKodesh does for you, is what I'm saying. Especially if drinking is your vice. The next one was strength. Then the second that had spoken of the strength of the king began to say, O ye men, do not men excel in strength that bear rule over sea and land and all things in them? But yet the king is more mighty, for he is Adonai of all these things and has dominion over them. And whatsoever he commands them, they do. If he bid them make war the one against the other, they do it. If he sends them out against the enemies, they go and break down mountains, walls, and towers. They slay and are slain and transgress not the king's commandment. If they get the victory, they bring all to the king as well as the spoil, all things else. Likewise, for those that are no soldiers and have not to do with wars, but use husbandry, when they have reaped again that which they had sown, they bring it to the king and compel one another to pay tribute unto the king. And yet he is but one man. If he commands to kill, they kill. If he commands to spare, they spare. If he commands to smite, they smite. If he commands to make desolate, they make desolate. If he command to build, they build. If he command to cut down, they cut down. If he command to plant, they plant. So all his people and his armies obey him. Furthermore, he lies down, he eats and drinks and takes his rest. And these keep watch round about him. Neither may anyone depart and do his own business, neither disobey they him in anything. O ye men, how should not the king be mightiest when in such sort he is obeyed? and he held his tongue. This is someone who thinks truly that man in position is truly in power. If we read the scriptures in the book of Daniel, the Most High rules in the kingdom of men. So I know that the third guy hearing is like, oh, I'm about to cook. Because these first two don't really hit as much. You got drinking as strong as it's, all you had to do was put it down or have moderation. Then the power is not given to the mightiest drink or the mightiest drinker. It's the moderation that can beat that. That's not mighty. Then he said, oh, the strength of the king. But we know kings come and go. Kings can be conquered. How is he that mighty when a peasant can sneak in and kill a king in his court? Such as when the left-handed Ehud struck down the Moabite king by thrusting his dagger into his fat stomach so deep that the knife disappeared. And this is a man who was not a king. Again, this is what we understand. So Zerubbabel and Yasharelli, he goes, O ye men, is not the king, great king, nor the multitude of men, neither is it wine that excels. Who is it then that rules them or has the kingship over them? Are they not women? Women have borne the king and all the people that bear rule by sea and land. Even of them came they, and they nourished them up that planted the vineyards from whence the wine comes. These also make garments for men. These bring glory unto men, and without women cannot men be. Yeah, and if men have gathered together gold and silver or any other goodly thing, do they not love a woman which is commonly in favor and beauty? And letting all things go, do they not gape, and even with the open mouth fix their eyes fast on her? And have not all men more desire unto her than unto silver or gold or any goodly thing whatsoever? A man leaves his own father that brought him up and his own country and cleaves unto his woman. By this also ye must know that women have dominion over you. Do ye not labor and toil and give and bring all to the woman? Yet a man takes his sword and goes his way to rob and to steal and to sail upon the sea and upon rivers and looks upon a lion and goes in the darkness. And when he has stolen, spoiled, and robbed, he brings it to his love. Wherefore a man loves his woman better than father or mother. Yet many there be that have run out of their wits for women and become servants for their sakes. Many also have perished, have erred, and sinned for women. Let me stop right there. This is 99.9% of us. And you know it. A lot of us came out of our character in our earlier days because of women or because of girls. Some of us have a skewed image of what real love is because of the women that we dated. A lot of us men, especially the quiet ones, have allowed women to toy with our gentleness, our patience, and our quiet nature. So much so that when we felt embarrassed by it, we changed our entire personality so that this particular type of woman would never do that to us again. And some of us, this is how that villain arc started. The whole thing of, you know, good guys finish last. So all the guys who get the girls actually are the assholes. The guys who become mysterious. The guys who are, you know, have a nature about them that instills fear more than love. And then some of us attached our ruachs to this particular type of personality or identity. And you add strong wine with that. We are walking monsters upon the daughters of men. And then the karma with that is we get daughters ourselves, or our daughters go through what we put women through. And we know the scriptures of how the Most High is not going to acquit the father. He is going to visit the sons of the father to the third or fourth or fifth generation. So when people tell me, oh, I don't think worshiping and praising the Most High is not a big deal, I think you really need to revisit the sins of your past. Because if you don't serve, and if you don't serve him in Ruach and in truth, who's to say he won't visit your neglect to serve him through your child, when you would want your child in this generation and the generations to come to be truly prepared and fortified spiritually. This is what I think about. And I thought about this deeply once I turned to the path of Yahuwah when my child was, 10 years old. I have labored. And I don't know if the Most High is going to equip me for the things that I've done to women, but I have labored tirelessly to make sure or barter for her tomorrows. This is what you need to think about if you are with a woman and you're thinking about, having a child or bringing the child in, or if you're a man seeking a woman, or if you're a man that's a father now, you would need to understand this as well. You don't want those trials and tribulations or those generational curses, that trauma, to pour into your child and their development. Like, we had enough character development by Yah to change from our wicked ways. And I don't mean to rush the process out of any of you, but we are coming to a time where you see how people are reaping and sowing and reaping at top-notch speeds, like Ethernet speeds. Y'all know that the whole thing about Lil Jon, he's of course not following scripture, and he's trying to do this whole soul chakra, this body, makeover thing. But you saw him lose his son. Now, I don't know if this is for services rendered, but the numerology is there. He lost his son, Nathan Murray Smith, in ordinal gematria. His name comes out to 223. Backwards is 322, which is skull and bones. He died on his 27th year, or 27th age. His birthday was 5/13/2025. When he turned 27. You add those numbers up, it comes to 27. 27 written out is 49. Skull and bones is 49 in the same cipher. He went missing February 3rd, found 3 days later, February 6th. The story was that he ran out of his home naked at 6 a.m. and they just happened to find him 3 days later and a pawn. Now, the story is going to be, he was on drugs, or he was going through some type of brain trauma or emotional trauma. He was going crazy. He was mentally unstable. They love to imprint that storyline on everybody who doesn't have the explanation or the wherewithal to look deeper into what really happened. He just so happens, from the end date of this ritual or his sacrifice, it was 270 days from his 27th birthday. His DJ name, Young Slade, is 42 in reduction. February, because it's Black History Month, is 42 in reduction. And I said this before, 42 is also the N-word. And there's a reason why they do this. It's to mock us without actually saying it to our faces. But September 1st, 2025, Lil Jon won that third place in a Muscle Beach fitness competition. I would hope it wouldn't be just for he sacrificed his son for this nonsense. But, you have to pay for a platform. You have to pay for attention. So from that time he won that award to his birthday, which is January 17th, it's 4 months and 2 weeks, which is strange to me because that's exactly the same numeric timeline that Kendrick Lamar won his 27th Grammy. He won it on February 1st. His birthday is 6/17, which is 4 months and 2 weeks apart. So this is how I know that they sacrificing at speeds that we weren't truly ready for or prepared for. But if you've seen it so many times and you understand the pattern recognition with these people and what they do with these sacrifices and rituals, it seemed like it's on time. So you seem like he's paying for services rendered, for being popular all these years, for his talent all these years, if you want to even call it talent. And the reason why they use 27, because it ain't nothing but three and that little three to the on the top of it, like three to the third power. You know how it's written. Just another way to show 33. So to go back to it, who's to say that even Lil Jon didn't do all this for attention? And you don't do it for all male attention. You do it for female attention. Why did Jay-Z become a Prince or Freemason? Why did did he select Beyonce? Why did he go after Aaliyah? Why was his whole image hidden behind his appearance and women shunning him? Because that's what you hear mostly about. You don't hear of white men turning him down because of who he was. You didn't hear many stories of him, you know, being upset at record companies because they didn't like his music. What was most of what you kept hearing about him, and even that his wife reiterated, was his looks. Not being attractive enough to gain attention from women. This is how a man would err. So you would think this man, so insecure with his looks, chose Prince Hall Freemasonry, chose Luciferianism, chose to be around pedophiles, all because he wanted the attention of women. That's pretty much a deep dive into that black hole that will never be filled with them. Because we lose our looks the more we get older. So he's pretty much putting himself in a very, very small box where he can't use nothing but money and his influence. So much so that he gotta get children. And this is how I knew that it was a little strange when I was doing this winter campaign for Rockaware, and we did it in, I don't know if it was in Aspen, Colorado. And they had rented this really big house up on the hills or one of the mountains. It was a big house, nice size. And then we were sitting watching LeBron play when he was playing for the Cavaliers. So it had to be like around 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. And, you know, at that time, I'm used to having wrap parties with them. Like after you shoot a fashion show, fashion show or a shooting campaign, you do a little wrap party with people involved, photographers, the models, so forth. So when I did my photo shoot with Naomi Campbell was there, Freeway was there, and Jamie King was there. You know her, she was in Pearl Harbor. She was there. I did one of the photos with her. And though they were gone, so only people left were just me, Jay, B, my manager, Freeway, and that was it. So around 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, we drinking, we getting lit, and all of a sudden, all these kids come out of nowhere, and these kids just started sitting down. And one girl who was, I think it was like a little light skinned black girl. To tell you the truth, I really think it's that girl that I posted on my Instagram. It was a video. You can see it on X. There was a video where Sean Combs knocks on the door and Jay comes out all excited, and Puffy goes, "This is what we doing on a Saturday." And then Jay looks into the room and looks at Puff like all giddy and excited. And when they show who's in the room, it's nothing but kids. But there's a girl with this little Afro puff, light-skinned brown girl. And it was similar. That girl was similar to the girl that was sitting next to me while she was sitting next to B. Now, I don't know what would B was showing her because I was dancing and acting a fool. But when I sat down, I overheard her say, "Isn't this sexy?" And I was like, what is she even showing this girl? But I was already so lit, but I didn't even pay attention to it. So I just looked over and I was like, I was almost so cringed about it. I was like, I know I didn't hear what I just heard. So after she said that, I got up. I was like, all right, I'm going to go. So I kind of blacked out about it. And I went to go say bye to Jay. Almost fell over on him because I was lit. And then I left. And that was it. And then I got up and gone about my business back to where I was going. But that, for some reason, that night always stuck with me. Like, what did she actually mean by that? And then hearing the stories of, you know, their closeness to young women or young girls or young kids, then it made more sense why people were saying what they were saying. And that's, again, the basis of that is erring for women. Going so deep into Satanism and that do what thy will law of Thelema that Aleister Crowley preached about, all because of women or being rejected by women. But anyway, back to the story. And now, do ye not believe me? No, matter of fact, I'm going to stop there because there's the righteous side to that. And it was what happened to David. Because when you err, whether it be you put your hands on a woman, whether you scream and yell, whether you do something, you have to come back through Yahuwah to be accepted. I would tell my wife all this, hey, I'm not afraid of you. Like, I'm not afraid of you, but I am afraid of what the Most High can do to me based on how I treat you. Like, I'm more fearful because of that. Because I've seen what I've done with my own hands. And I've seen myself going to holding cells here and there, staying there for 15 hours. You know, the typical, you be in a holding cell for 15 hours, you post bond, you come on out, and then you do your necessary work of trying to get the girl not to press charges, or you pay her off. In my position, I paid most of these girls off that I had these little altercations with. There was only one girl that the price point exceeded $100,000+. The rest of them were like $10,000 I would give them, and they would just shut their mouth and go on about their business. Which they really, that when I pressed the issue, they really didn't want to see me in jail. Which, I mean, you would think that you would hate me and I would embarrass you and it'd become public knowledge or it'd be in the media that I did this with you, that you would never want to see me in jail. So most of these women, I just gave money. And if I was romantically linked with them, then it would be like, oh, okay, like blah, blah, blah. I won't press charges. And then we go into another situation where we arguing again in public. And then another situation where I'm put in a holding cell. So yeah, I've erred many, 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 many times from messing with the wrong women. And then to tell you the truth, it wasn't a multiple. At some of these situations, it was like the same woman. Like, it would be a woman that I dated in college, or it would be a woman I dated while I was in Kansas City. And for some reason, I couldn't fill that void of not just being around women. It would be the same women that's toxic, would get toxic around me. And I would see it as, okay, you didn't destroy me this time, but I will keep allowing you to test that parameter into destroying the career I built. And it would happen couple of times with the same person. So when I tell you erring, my middle name should be erring because of women. But David went through the same situation we went through. Just like I feel like it's all part of Yehuda's bloodline, because Yehuda had the same problems too. Yehuda erred because of a woman. When he came from off that field lit and he saw a prostitute, and he gave that prostitute all that he had, and he tried to deny the fact that he done got this prostitute, which is his daughter-in-law, pregnant. And he embarrassed and shamed himself. So that story is transferred or right down into the generational curse line of men of Yehuda having issues with either alcohol or women. If you read the patriarch or the 12 patriarch testimonies or testaments, he talks about that. He talks about watching what you drink and watching the women. Being a little bit smarter with your actions and your emotions. But obviously that crept up in David. If you go to Psalms 51, he goes, "Have mercy upon me, O Yahuwah, according to your loving kindness, according unto the multitude of your tender mercies. Blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin, for I acknowledge my transgressions and my sin is ever before me. Against you, you only have I sinned and done this evil in your sight, that you might be justified when you speak and be clear when you judge. Behold, I was shaped in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Behold, you desire truth in the inward parts, and in hidden part you shall make me know wisdom. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear your joy and gladness, that the bones which you have broken may rejoice. Hide your face from my sins, and blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O Elohim, and renew a right ruach within me. Cast me not away from your presence, and take not your ruach hakodesh from me. Restore unto me the joy of your Yeshua, and uphold me with your free ruach. Then will I teach transgressors your ways, and sinners shall be turned back unto you. Deliver me from blood guiltiness," when he had Uriah killed. "O Yahuwah of my Yeshua, and my tongue shall sing aloud of your righteousness. O Adonai, open my lips and my mouth, shall show forth your praise, for your desire, not sacrifice, else would I give it. You delight not in ascending smoke offering. So when you sin, when you go back on the covenant, don't think sacrificing and giving the Most High beef, lamb, and ascending smoke offering of wine, oil, mingled with flour and all that. Don't think that's going to appease or make him happy after you're in sin. I found that out perfectly a couple years ago when I was doing feast days, when I transgressed. And I felt like, ooh, I'm just going to offer more. He was like, he sent my eyes to a verse, I think it was in Malachi. It said, I will not accept an ascending smoke offering at your hand because my hands were filthy. So I was like, you know what? I need to get right for real, for real. So he's going to point you in the direction. So what David's saying is absolutely true. The sacrifices of Yahuwah are a broken ruach, a broken and a contrite heart. O Yahuwah, you will not despise. So when you come into your sin or the fullness of your sin, or you transgress either because of woman or because of strong drink, don't think, oh, I'm just going to do these feast days, the best I can do these feast days. I'm going to offer the best I can offer and think that's going to satisfy the Most High being upset at you while you chose your free will to do wickedness and unrighteousness. Do good in your good pleasure unto Zion. Build the walls of Jerusalem. Then shall you be pleased with the sacrifices of righteousness, with ascending smoke offering and whole ascending smoke offering. Then shall they offer bullocks upon your altar. So again, this is another confirmation that this is the norm, that before we did the ascending smoke offerings and offerings to show that we love and praise and worship and are thankful for what Yahuwah has done for us. And he's setting a point that over time, this is how we thought that we could get over sin, because at that time, the sin offering was part of the ascending smoke offering. So we abused that sin offering. So this is why he stopped accepting our ascending smoke offerings, because we thought it would be appeasing to him, just like those other nations appease their gods by just sacrificing whatever swine flesh or whatever unclean foods that they were sacrificed unto idols. That's how they appeased their god. Like, oh, I did wrong and not worshiping or praying to you. Let me lay out this food so you can be not so mad at me and you can bless me. This is how we think the Most High deals with us with sin. We think that when we sin, we can do some good works and be like, oh, okay. We don't need to repent. We don't need a broken ruach when we come and to ask forgiveness for our sins. We think that he's going to get over it because he's long-suffering and merciful, that he's going to get over it without repentance. If that was true, it wouldn't need to be us being baptized and us repenting and us, you know, asking for forgiveness for our generational curses. If it was like that, he says that in the land of your captivity, you will turn to me. Not in your land of your captivity, I just got to wait till I'm over it and then I'm going to come talk to you. No, it wasn't like that. So back to what's stronger. And now, do you not believe me? Is not the king great in his power? Do not all regions fear to touch him? Yet did I see him and Apami, whatever, the king's concubine, the daughter of the admiral Bartkus, sitting at the right hand of the king and taking the crown from the king's head and setting it upon her own head, she also struck the king with her left hand. And yet, for all this, the king gaped and gazed upon her with open mouth. And if she laughed upon him, he laughed also. But if she took any displeasure at him, the king was fain to flatter, that she might be reconciled to him again. O ye men, how can it be but women should be strong, seeing they do thus? Then the king and the princes looked one upon another, so he began to speak the truth. O ye men, are not women strong? Great is the earth, high is the heaven, swift is the sun in his course, for he compasses the heavens round about and fetches his course again to his own place in one day. This is this brother speaking true knowledge, and he knows that the world is flat. He said it in this one verse. O ye men, are not women strong? Great is the earth, high is the heaven, swift is the sun in his course. For he compasses the heavens round about, and fetches his course again to his own place in one day. So it is the sun that moves around the earth, not the earth moving around the sun. So you know this brother gonna cook, because he already cooking, and he ain't even gotten to the fruit of his point yet, the fruit of his sentence, the fruit of his explanation of why certain things are stronger than the other. Is he not great that makes these things? Therefore, great is the truth, and stronger than all things. All the earth cries upon the truth, and the heaven blesses it. All works shake and tremble at it, and with it is no unrighteous thing. Wine is wicked, the king is wicked, women are wicked, all the children of men are wicked, and such are all their wicked works, and there is no truth in them. In their unrighteousness also they shall perish. As for the truth, it endures, and it is always strong. It leaves and conquers forevermore. With her there is no accepting of persons or rewards, but she does the things that are just, and refrains from all unjust and wicked things, and all men do well like of her works. Neither in her judgment is any unrighteousness, and she is the strength, kingdom, power, and majesty of all ages. Blessed be Yahuwah of truth. And with that he held his peace. And all the people then shouted and said, Great is truth, and mighty above all things. Then said the king unto him, Ask what you will more than is appointed in the writing, and we will give it to you, because you are found wisest, and you shall sit next to me and shall be called my cousin. Then said he unto the king, Remember your vow, which you have vowed to build Jerusalem in the day when you came to your kingdom. So you would have to know this is all done through Yahuwah, because you must serve him in Ruach and truth. And what comes with that? Wisdom and truth, and also understanding. So you should feel that Yahuwah set this competition in place for us, again, as Israelites, to rise higher than any other person in the nation for the glory of Yahuwah. Just like how Yosef rose high in the kingdom of Egypt. Just like how Moshe rose high in the children of among the children of Cush. Just like Daniel rose high in Babylonian captivity amongst the Babylonians. This has always been Yahuwah's plan. No matter where we were sent, we rose through our obedience. We were exalted because of our obedience, and because we were cleaving unto understanding, wisdom, and truth. How much more is this truthful when it comes to this last captivity? It's only that Satan beat us to it by raising up Prince Alfred Mason and those who we believe were the smartest among us, the wisest among us, the strongest among us, when they really are the weakest and the dumbest among us. Because that's what sin does. Sin makes you dumb. This is why we're able to break down now this system, to either be numerology, symbolism, or just being tired of it, because we see how dumb it is. This is what I want for those of you who are stuck in your 100% awareness. I saw this guy on TikTok. He was talking about that. He's like I said before, he was wanting to get rid of his awareness. But this awareness is supposed to be used to break the system down, so you can see how truly weak and pathetic it is. And then you, in your strength, mighty in wisdom, mighty in Ruach, mighty in understanding, would know how to use the weak things of this world for your purpose. This is why we have full awareness. This is why the Most High said as a prophecy, I'm pouring out my Ruach upon all flesh. So people who are getting the Ruach Yahuwah don't even know why they feel the way they feel, because they're stuck in trying to be in this world by being aware of this world. It doesn't work. There's no way in the world you would go to a Travis Scott concert after being aware of this particular artist. There's no way in the world you would go into a football stadium knowing damn well what these football stadiums are. and how they energy harvest. There's no way in the world that you would go protest for Renee Good, especially when you were exposed to how this symbolism and ritual came about, where this sacrifice was used for people to have civil unrest. There's no way in the world that you could be fooled in this world by still doing what this world does. So it would make sense to me, man, that you would choose a side. Truly, if you're going, you can't turn off your awareness. You might as well kiss that goodbye. That's stuck with you forever. To the day you go into your grave, you can't even put your head in the sand. It's like, I'm tired of being aware. It ain't gonna happen, because once your ruach is fed, it's going to want to keep being fed. The only way you could dilute it, the only way you could turn it off, is if you go deeper into a vice, the same vices that's mentioned here. You can make a king mighty by worshiping him. Just like people worship Donald Trump or worship a celebrity. You give away that power because you choose not to be aware. You want celebrities to be aware for you. You want the president to be aware for you. You want the government and its covenants to be aware for you. That's a slippery slope, to the point where you'll start to see eventually, when that falls apart, when that's broken down, that you're being abused by this power that you have given your life over to. Same thing with women. You could be like, oh, I don't want to be aware anymore. Let me go into women. But the difficulty with that is, once your flesh is turned off and you unturned your walk on, you won't last. I guarantee you, you won't last trying to be a hoe again. I'm telling you, I'm talking about sexually, you won't last. Because your flesh is, you have made your flesh weak. So even if you try to couple that, it was like, okay, I just need to get drunk to last longer with women. Because now I'm trying to dilute my ruach. Is what Paul says, I'm trying to quench the ruach. I don't want it talking to me. I don't want it bringing me verses. I don't want it trying to make me upright. It only takes one night for you to go into a bar to try to remove that awareness from you. And then you end up in a fight. You get too drunk. You get sick. You take a girl home, you catch something, or you have a baby out of wedlock. You set in course what you want to be or how you're going to use your awareness. You set the course. This is why he gave us free will. And depending how you use your free will, it can be protected or it can be abused. So what you choose to do, Super Bowl night, it's truly up to you. But don't think the Most High don't know what you're going to do. And some of you are so anxious. You're ready for this world to collapse. You're ready for everything to happen. I get it. I'm with you sometimes. But the reason why the Most High has set you to be awakened at certain times or aware at certain things at certain times is because you need to perfect certain ways of how to deal with when this world collapses. No one has ever felt a 24-hour, even a 72, or even a week-long power grid failure. Some of you in Texas who were part of that Texas storm, or in New York in around like 2003 when they had a little blackout, maybe some of you were there and had already examples of how to fight through it. But for the most part, in this digital age, this technical industrialization phase, none of us have ever experienced all of this happening at one time, along with our bank accounts either being froze or the banks just not working or spitting out money. And I'm telling you, they're going to make people do a run on a bank. And I always stand against that as a go-to of once you feel like you can't get your money out, they make you go run and get it, which is what they want you to do. Because if you take money out, you take a large amount or a substantial amount out, you don't know when banks are going to turn back on and say, all right, we're going to digital, that we're not accepting money because it's no good for us. It's no point of putting the money in the bank because the hyperinflation ate it up. So the dollar, when it used to be a dollar, is now worth 32 cents. So why would I, what am I going to do with all this paper? In order to fulfill let's say if your account is overdrawn, say if your account is overdrawn $100 or $1,000, and the hyperinflation has ate that up. You know how much money you have to put back in that bank? And they can only hold a certain amount of bills before they have to go burn it. So banks are like, we can't take all this cash. We have nowhere to store it because of the hyperinflation has eaten it up. So we're not taking it. And if you look at what happened to the Weimar Republic at the time of war, which they're already predictable programming is going to come, this holy war, it's going to eat up the money supply. Look at Venezuela. Look at Zimbabwe. Look at their money. Look at Ghana. I don't know why Negroes is flying to Ghana when they have just the worst economic crisis going on as we're about to experience. But look at that. Look at what happened. Look at what they're doing with the money. They're using that currency for artwork. Paper mache. Especially in Venezuela. They're not even using that money. And if you remember the Weimar Republic, they was wheelbarrowing that money around. It was stacks of money like bricks that they had to wheelbarrow around just for one loaf of bread. And you know who's in that money supply. You know who's controlling usury. And that's what they want. You accept whatever is coming if they take away financial security, if they take away home security. If vice, at the end of the vice of women and alcohol, you need money to accomplish these things. And if you have made your whole personality and your identity about getting this bread and getting this money and isolating yourself off just to get more money, I'm telling you, it's going to eventually eat you up. Because you won't have enough when it truly goes into hyperinflation. And if your taste for certain things, your love for materialistic things is not put a hold on. And the reason why you go into materialism is because you're about to err over women or err over alcohol. It's one and the same. And if you don't learn moderation, you are not going to make it. When they actually turn this grid off, or they turn the financial records off, or they turn your banks off for a period of time, and they know how long they would need to turn these things off in order for you to act out of character. And if you don't have the patience to know who you serve, either Yahuwah or money, good luck with you. You're going to come out of character and you're going to eat yourself up, not through those devices, but you're going to eat yourself up by just not having things. A drought of materials, a drought of resources. That's why I love that verse in Enoch 104, verses 3 through 12. It says, wait with patient hope, nor relinquish your confidence, for great joy shall be yours, like that of the angels in heaven. Conduct yourselves as you may, still you shall not be concealed in the day of great judgment. You shall not be found like sinners, and eternal condemnation shall be far from you, so long as the world exists. And now, fear not, righteous, when you see sinners flourishing and prosperous in their ways. Be not associates with them, but keep yourselves at a distance from their oppression. Be you associated with the host of heaven. You, sinners, say all our transgressions shall not be taken account of and be recorded, but all your transgressions shall be recorded daily. And be assured by me that light and darkness, day and night, behold all your transgressions. Be not impious in your thoughts. Lie not, surrender not the word of uprightness. Lie not against the word of the holy and El Yahuwah. Glorify not your idols, for all your lying and all your impiety is not for righteousness, but for great crime. They shall speak evil things, they shall utter falsehood, and great creation and compose Sepharim in their own words, but when they shall write all my words correctly in their own languages, they shall neither change nor diminish them, but shall write them all correctly, all which from the first I have uttered concerning them. This also goes to the definition of new moons mentioned in Enoch 78:14. Another mystery also I point out to the righteous, and the wise shall be given Sepharim of joy, of integrity, of great wisdom. To them shall Sepharim be given, in which they shall believe, and in which they shall rejoice, and all the righteous shall be rewarded, who from these shall acquire the knowledge of every upright path. In those days, says Yahuwah, they shall call to the children of the earth and make them listen to their wisdom. Show them that you are their leaders, and that the remuneration shall take place over the whole earth. For I and my son will forever hold communion with them in the paths of uprightness while they are still alive. Peace shall be yours. Rejoice, children of integrity, in the truth. And that truth starts with Yahuwah Elohaka, or Yahuwah Elohanu, Yahuwah Sevaot. That's where that truth starts. You cannot get truth from this world. If you're getting truth from this world, I'm telling you, you're getting it, as they say, a day late and a dollar short. That's when you're getting their truth. When they start releasing things, it's because they want you to know them. A people who pride themselves on secrecy, and they do symbolism showing you that they want to be secret by putting their hands up to their mouths and their lips and the little hand over their eye. They are sworn to secrecy. So why would they release anything about Jeffrey Epstein? Why would they release anything if they didn't have a purpose in releasing it? They know people are going to deep dive into an endless black hole with nothing to show for it. You're not going to get an arrest. You're not going to get a congressional hearing. You're not going to stop the sex and human trafficking slave trade. All they did was jump to another island. They got the number one culprit, what they people believe is locked up, Ghislaine Maxwell, and she ain't said nothing. Not even the fear of death, not even the fear of electric chair, not a fear of being on death row, nothing. She has not said nothing, nothing of point. They could give you all of who've been on that island and you won't see nobody in front of a judge. And if you do, it'd be fake. Just like the whole Sean Combs incident was fake. You think he in prison? You think R. Kelly's in prison? They're Prince Hall Freemasons. In order to serve Satan, you have to serve him through sexuality and blood. If you can combine the two in the same ritual, you're doing what you're supposed to do for him. Why would he put you in jail for doing what he has called you to do? I love this. I'm going to close this with 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and then 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 58. 1 Corinthians 3:13. Every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. I don't care how many times they get away with it. I know at the end of the day, they're not going to get away with it. I know the Most High is truthful when he tells me that their ashes are going to be on this ground for us to step upon. I know when Ezra says that, be patient, for you would tread on the enemy's neck. I truly believe so. The Most High has not lied to me yet or led me down any path where I wouldn't get recompense from the troubles and tribulations I faced. It says, therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of Yahuwah, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in Yahuwah. What that laboring is, watching after the fatherless, doing good to the widow, giving alms to the poor, and everything that is mentioned in this one great commandment, which is love Yahuwah Elohaka with all your mind, with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And you need to read the scriptures, and I have me read them to you, of all the things that concern pleasing the Most High. Let's see y'all next week.